This is the KOTO Community Radio News for Wednesday, April 7th. I'm Julia Caulfield. In today's headlines, San Miguel County most vaccinated in the state. Case approves modified two-weekend bluegrass festival. Backcountry sees smorgasbord of avalanche danger and a mountain weather forecast. Per capita, San Miguel County is the most vaccinated county across Colorado. That's according to data from the Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment.
We were called out as number one for giving at least one dose to people. So really, I can't say enough the hard work that the three different providing groups have been doing to take us up to this level, as well as the community really going out and taking advantage of this regional pharmacy options too.
That's San Miguel County Public Health Director Grace Franklin at a Board of County Commissioners meeting on Wednesday. Franklin notes that statistic includes people who have received at least one dose of the vaccine. It doesn't indicate how many people are fully vaccinated. But when it comes to those numbers, Franklin says the county is doing well too. As of Tuesday, she says over 2,500 people in San Miguel County are fully vaccinated, accounting for one dose of the Janssen vaccine or two doses of either the Pfizer or Moderna,
which is about 30% of our population, which is just absolutely spectacular. And for those, if we continue down the route that everybody who's received a first dose does receive a second dose, that would account for 70% of our adult population or 56% of our total population if we were to wrap in kids.
In addition, Franklin says the county is in a prime spot to provide the vaccine for anyone who wants it.
We're reaching a point where if somebody hasn't been able to schedule a vaccine appointment, that there's maybe a glitch in the system or they're missing something, because we have the supplies, we have the plan, and we have the ability to vaccinate folks if they want it and they're 18 or older.
But that doesn't mean the county is at a place to start reducing public health measures. At least, not quite.
The risks are currently outweighing the benefits of removing our COVID preventative measures. But truly, I think by that end of May piece, where we have so many folks that have received that second dose, we could be in a much different place and a much different conversation based off of that level of protection.
She notes in that interim, the county still needs to take precautions to limit the spread of the virus. That means the five commitments. The Public Health Department will continue to provide vaccine clinics on a weekly, at least, basis for the next month or so. To pre-register for the COVID vaccine, go to bit.ly/smcvaccine. Public health officials will also be at the community table on Main Street to register people for the vaccine in the coming weeks. The banjos are getting tuned and tarps dusted off. On Wednesday, the Telluride Bluegrass Festival came one step closer to returning to Town Park in 2021 after a COVID-induced hiatus in 2020. The Telluride Commission for Community Assistance, Arts, and Special Events approved the festival for a modified gathering that would play out over two weekends rather than one. The extension would help compensate for reduced capacity and a smaller event footprint.
This is going to look more like a jazz festival.
That's Parks and Recreation Projects Coordinator John Wontrobsky outlining the proposal at the case meeting. The town's Parks and Rec Commission also approved the choice last month. Under the modified approach, the festival would take place the weekend before Solstice weekend, on Friday through Sunday, and Solstice weekend, Thursday through Sunday, with a limit of no more than 3,000 people per day. Music would also start later, with artists at 3 or 5 p.m., depending on the day, and ending at 10:30 p.m. technically, Planet Bluegrass still has to officially choose whether to go with the two weekends or their traditional one weekend larger event. But festival promoter Craig Ferguson notes last week the festival told Parks and Recreation Director Stephanie Jacquet and County Public Health Director Grace Franklin they want the two weekends.
To us, it seems obvious that no event will go over any minor limit threshold under any circumstance. Even if we were all vaccinated, I don't think that's going to change the state or county rules. So we're pretty appreciative to be able to have 7 days of music in Town Park.
With 10-person pods socially distanced, Ferguson explains the organizers estimate they can fit 2,500 people in Town Park. Ticketing is still uncertain, but Ferguson notes Planet Bluegrass has two priorities.
One is to existing ticket holders, but two, we also know that this is a local event this year. And that's even from our staff perspective. There's some folks that just aren't going to be able to come. We don't really know how to measure or how many locals want to actually buy. So that's something we're hoping with Stephanie and Grace to resolve that. It's kind of hard to go back and forth about a ticketing program. The local ticketing programs, even when we haven't been required, is something that we very much want to do. And in this situation, more than ever.
And just like everything during the pandemic, a degree of uncertainty will linger around the festival. Jacquet notes the gathering must adhere to whatever state, county, and local public health requirements are in place at the time.
We're currently in blue. If we were to go to yellow and the county regulations mirrored the current state guidelines, then that could drastically affect their capacity. So not knowing what the future holds, it's important to make that condition.
Still, planning for the 2021 Bluegrass Festival pushes on. Mid-June in Town Park will likely look different this year, but also more familiar than last year. Another step closer in the race to some sort of normalcy. Colorado had a 1-in-10-year unusual winter when it comes to avalanche danger. Now, heading into spring, Brian Lazar, deputy director at the Colorado Avalanche Information Center, says that unique winter snowpack is also affecting warmer conditions. KOTO News spoke with Lazar about current conditions and what recreators should keep in mind as they head into the backcountry. Hi, Brian. Thanks for taking a few minutes to chat with me today.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
To start off, we are in spring weather for sure. Can you share a little bit about what the avalanche conditions are at the moment?
Very much transitional. It might be the best descriptor right now. So, you know, we're transitioning from what was, you know, prior to about a week ago, a more winter-like snowpack with lots of dry snow and buried weak layers that were still dry and had not seen much liquid water yet, except on those low-elevation sunny slopes. We had quite the dramatic warm-up starting late last week and kind of through the weekend, and that put a lot of meltwater into the snow, and so that really jump-started the transition into our springtime snowpack. Eventually, you know, we pump enough water into the snowpack that it starts to drain effectively out through the bottom of the snowpack, drainage channels are established, and we get into a more predictable kind of melt freeze and hopefully some kind of corn cycle. But between the transition from kind of dry winter-like conditions to ripe and mature spring conditions, we often see avalanches, and we tend to see a fairly robust menu of the different kinds of flavors of avalanches we might see. And now is no different. What was a little bit notable about our wake up was, you know, we kind of abruptly shook our snowpack out of winter hibernation. And as we all know, you know, snowpack does not like rapid and abrupt change. And this was not a gradual descent in the, you know, warm spring type temperatures. It went from, you know, fairly stormy end of March, where it felt very much like winter, into downright hot weather. You know, it's felt like a switch was flipped. And when you see rapid changes like that, it was no surprise to many of us that we saw a fairly pronounced, you know, wet avalanche cycle, which included both loose wet and gouging avalanches and a number of wet slabs. It was one of the more active, you know, weak periods for, you know, wet slab avalanches in our data records, really.
You just mentioned the quick switch of weather, and we also had a quite unique winter when it came to avalanche danger. Is that winter snowpack having an effect on how the backcountry is looking now?
Yeah, those things are all related. And so, you know, we developed a snowpack that was, you know, one of the most dangerous kind of snowpack structures for avalanches that we, you know, had seen in about a decade. And that story started, you know, with the early season snowfall in October. And what really stacked up the worrisome snowpack structure was early season snowfall and then these, you know, prolonged kind of drought periods. You know, we had one in November, we had one in December. Whenever you see these kind of long dry periods when there's, you know, just cold, you know, clear weather, that's when we produce persistent weak layers in the snowpack. And the longer these drought periods go on when it's really cold and with clear nights, the more pronounced and reactive those weak layers become. So once we finally started to get more ample snowfall, you know, in the latter half of December, those weak layers just failed their first test in pretty spectacular fashion. And we saw, you know, widespread avalanche cycles. And those weak layers remained problematic, you know, well through February, which is one of, you know, our deadliest months on record, because these weak layers were just so weak and so widespread across the terrain. They did finally start to gain some strength and heal and become less reactive as we moved into March. And then we got warmer weather in March, and, you know, we developed crusts. And when we have crusts in the snowpack, we often see weak layers right around those crusts. So to simplify, we kind of had a smorgasbord of persistent weak layers throughout our snowpack. And so as we go through this transition, what happens is when those weak layers see meltwater infiltration for the first time, they quite frequently wake up and become reactive again and produce avalanches, because introducing water into a weak layer like that really weakens that weak layer and just makes it easier to fail. And so that's kind of what we saw over the last week, was water touching some of these weak layers for the first time in some of these places. And so we saw widespread avalanche activity. So it's all related. It's all related to the weak layer development. And that stuff started, you know, early, late in the fall, really.
Obviously, folks who are heading into the backcountry always need to be prepared and aware of what's going on with conditions. Given what's going on right now, is there anything you think folks should be especially paying attention to as they're heading out in the next week or so?
Yeah, and fortunately, it gets a little bit easier to manage as we move into these kind of melt-freeze type periods. And so right now, the most in-your-face and the most, by far, the most kind of widespread avalanche activity that's going to pose a threat to backcountry travelers are wet avalanches. And so those could be loose wet avalanches that are kind of gouging into deeper snow. And in some places, they've already kind of run their course on the low elevation sunny slopes. As you look around, you can see a lot of those slopes are just melting back to bare ground. And if they haven't, they've already seen so much meltwater that those drainage channels are fairly well established. In other words, they've seen so much water that or are melting out, becoming so thin that they're not much of a concern. But elsewhere, as the heat and the sun kind of creeps up, we can expect wet avalanche conditions to develop on many afternoons. And so the good news is for backcountry travelers is that we usually get fairly clear indications that wet avalanche activity is imminent. So in general, a good way to kind of reduce your risk in these, you know, spring-type conditions is to just plan to start and end your day early. And when you start to see those pinwheels or roller balls, or you get slushy surface conditions more than about like 6 inches deep, or even more, you know, kind of worrisome is like when you have just a thin surface freeze with wet snow underneath and the snowpack is no longer supportable and you start punching through on your machine or in your skis or in your boots into the underlying wet snow, it's time to either exit steep avalanche terrain or you got to move to colder, shadier slopes.
Brian, thanks for taking a few minutes to chat with me today.
Oh, I appreciate you reaching out. Thanks for getting the word out.
Those heading out should always check the avalanche forecast, available at colorado.gov/avalanche. The B.1.1.7 COVID variant, which started in the UK, has been present in San Miguel County for weeks now. But according to San Miguel County Public Health Director Grace Franklin, numbers are going down.
The first couple of samples that detected this variant had about two-thirds of the COVID that was detected also registered as the variant. And then our latest variant sample, which was on the 29th of March, only accounted for about 3% of COVID as the variant. So that's a pretty significant shift, especially as that number across the board remained pretty darn similar.
Franklin notes the number of COVID copies in the wastewater decreased significantly in the last sample, but that doesn't inherently mean the actual number went down.
This happened in the fall as well, when there was a really hot day, that there was dilution of the wastewater, which accounted for a lower number. So we'll just be keeping our eye out. We do expect it to drop fairly significantly with us entering into off-season, having a lower population number as a whole.
County officials will continue to monitor the data. The numbers have plateaued at roughly 50 to 60,000 COVID copies per liter since mid-February. There's always time to get a little greener. With summer just around the corner, a number of angling enthusiasts are preparing to wade into the water. This summer, Colorado Parks and Wildlife are making it easier for residents to carry their fishing license through the My Colorado app. According to CPW, residents will purchase their fishing license in the same way they have in the past. They will also still receive a physical printed license. But in addition, fishers will be allowed to display the license on their phone. The My Colorado app is already available for residents to display their driver's license. And CPW says they are also considering adding things like park passes, off-dog leash passes, and hunting licenses to the app. Secretary of the Interior Deb Haaland will travel to Utah this week to discuss stewardship of the Bears Ears and Grand Staircase Escalante National Monuments. Secretary Haaland will spend time in Kane and San Juan counties, and her trip will include field visits and meetings with stakeholders. She plans to visit both national monuments and meet tribal, federal, state, and local leaders. Her visit comes amid pressure to reverse the Trump administration's decision to shrink the monument's boundaries. Back in 2017, former President Trump announced that he would reduce the size of Bears Ears by 85% and Grand Staircase Escalante by half. Major League Baseball's All-Star Game will be played at Coors Field in Denver this summer. The league pulled out of Atlanta because of new laws in Georgia that critics say will make it harder to vote. Governor Jared Polis and Denver Mayor Michael Hancock are expecting the game will be well attended. Polis says the changeup will deliver a $190 million economic boost. And not just to Denver.
Many folks who come will explore Colorado, the branding that we'll get, the increased traffic in restaurants and bars across Colorado is going to be great for our economy at a needed time.
Polis says he is not concerned about the coronavirus at the crowded event because of ongoing vaccination efforts. It will be the first time since 1998 Colorado has hosted the game. Colorado lawmakers are abandoning an effort that would have changed how children are disciplined at school. KOTO's Scott Franz has more.
The measure would have stopped police from ticketing and arresting students for low-level crimes, like possessing marijuana or tobacco at school. Nonpartisan analysts at the Capitol estimated such a change would prevent about 300 students from being sentenced to probation next year. Supporters, including Governor Jared Polis, say it would help end the so-called school-to-prison pipeline by investing more in school counseling instead of police intervention. But the sponsors are pulling it, citing concerns from law enforcement and educators who fear keeping police out of school discipline could promote crime. Republicans also opposed the bill. I'm Scott Franz at the State Capitol.
The National Weather Service forecast for the Western San Juans calls for increasing clouds tonight with a low in the mid-20s. Thursday should be partly sunny during the day and mostly clear at night, with a high near 55 degrees and a low around 25. Friday calls for sunny skies with a high near 50. Friday night should be clear, with a low around 25. This has been the news for Wednesday, April 7th. Thanks for listening. If you have a story idea or a news tip, call the news team at 728-3206. Kodo News will be scaling back for the next 2 weeks, with newscasts on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday during that time. We will start back with our full news programming on April 19th. And now, a personal commentary.
Hey, Kodo listeners. At Tri-County Health Network, we know that as you age, you might need a little bit of extra support. Resources can be hard to come by in our rural region, which is why we provide a variety of services for older adults over 60 or anyone living with a disability. If there is a person in your life who could use additional resources to continue living safely and comfortably at home, TCH Network staff can complete an in-home assessment, an easy and convenient process where one of our staff members makes an in-home visit to assess whether there are any resources that would help the resident remain living independently. During the assessment, we can talk about services such as home-delivered meals, durable medical equipment like crutches, walkers, shower benches, and more, transportation, care coordination, advocacy and options counseling. Plus, we will work with the individual to create a plan for care that focuses on their own goals. Whether an individual needs assistance or if they are simply a caregiver who needs a break, our care coordination team is here to help. Give us a call today at 970-708-7096 or visit tchnetwork.org/programs/care-coordination.
Opinions broadcast over KOTO are those of the speakers. You are also invited to express your views after the news or on Access each weekday at around 4 p.m. If you would like to comment, please contact a staff person here at KOTO. We encourage you to speak out on important public issues.